Welcome to Trial Tested, a podcast by the American College of Trial Lawyers. Trial Tested is a discussion about life and law created to elevate and inspire trial attorneys. I'm Dave Thomas, and I'll be your host today. It's my great pleasure today to bring you a conversation with attorney Jeff Leon. Jeff is a partner at Bennett Jones in Toronto, and he is one of Canada's preeminent lawyers. Jeff is a fellow of the American College of Trial Lawyers and served as our president in 2018 and 2019. Jeff is also a fellow of the Chartered Institute of Arbitrators and a 2005 recipient of the Law Society Medal from the Law Society of Ontario. Jeff received a Bachelor of Arts degree from the University of Alberta, where he was a gold medalist. Subsequent to that, he attended the University of Toronto, where he earned a Master of Arts in Sociology and Criminology and a Bachelor of Laws degree. One of Jeff's most notable accomplishments, and one we'll be discussing during today's conversation, is his recent service as the co-lead counsel to the Public Order Emergency Commission in Canada. Jeff, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dave. A pleasure to be here.
We're all thrilled to have you here and to hear about your experiences both as an attorney and with the college. And in order to set the stage for that, what I want to begin by doing is asking you to introduce yourself to our listeners, maybe in ways they wouldn't already know you. Tell us what your origin story is as you were growing up and how that led you to a career in the law.
I grew up, Dave, in Edmonton, Alberta, which at the time was a fairly small city. I took my high school training there and then went to the University of Alberta, where I received a BA honors, as you've mentioned, in sociology. You know, I had a fairly modest upbringing, and as a result, I lived at home while I was going to my undergraduate. And once I finished that, then I moved on to Toronto. So living in Edmonton at the time was an interesting experience. This was before even the Edmonton Oilers came to town. And I basically, in a kind of junior high school, I started out having a position on the student executive. And during high school, I was very much involved in the B'nai B'rith Youth Organization and leadership positions there. Kind of reflects something that I learned from my father in terms of the importance of community service and giving back to the community. When I left Edmonton, I moved to Toronto, and I've been there ever since.
What led you to study sociology, and how did that then lead you to attending law school at the University of Toronto?
Well, that's an interesting story. I mean, at the time, I knew a fellow who was teaching sociology at the University of Alberta, and I became particularly interested in the issues related to the development of children, and later in terms of criminology. So I worked with a couple of professors there and then moved on to do my master's degree in Toronto. When I was finishing that, I had a choice to make because the sociology department in Toronto was, let me put it this way, fairly left-wing to the point where I felt a bit like Attila the Hun in what I was doing there. I spoke to one of my professors about it because I was debating whether to go on in social work or go somewhere else to get my PhD. And this professor said, well, why don't you try law school? And you can always come back here to teach at our Center of Criminology if you don't want to practice, but that would be a good degree. So I thought, kind of, why not? And I ended up at law school. I must say I was not an enthusiastic student at the beginning. I was more interested in policy issues than I was in the nitty-gritty of learning about cases. I tended to do a fair bit of writing and publishing still in the criminology area in those days. But once I moved a couple of years into my legal education, I became increasingly interested in the law. I articled with a firm in Toronto, And then I spent a year as a law clerk to the Chief Justice of Ontario. And in that capacity, I very much got to work with some of the most respected judges that Ontario has ever had. That kind of sealed the deal for me in terms of my interest in litigation and in trial work, and I went on from there.
Were you the first lawyer in your family?
No, that's my older brother is a lawyer. He did litigation and trial work at another firm in Toronto. And I have a younger brother who's also a lawyer who practices in Calgary. He's not as involved in trial work as kind of a more business type of general practice.
It sounds like then going to law school was something that you decided a little bit later in life after you had progressed through some of your higher education. Was it something you had contemplated before, like when you're, you know, a younger student, or was this sort of a, you know, mid-20s kind of career shift?
More of the latter. I had thought I would always end up in, as I said, either maybe doing social work or in academia. When I first moved to Toronto, my older brother and I were living together, and he was at the time practicing, and I talked to him from fairly often about what he was doing, and it sounded interesting, and that kind of helped me make the decision that, well, why don't I give this a try? But certainly, as a small town guy from Edmonton, I never saw myself having the legal career that I've had, and I feel very fortunate in that.
Well, and the profession is fortunate to have had you. Could you tell us a little bit about what some of your early days were practicing, what that was like, and the role that that played in your development as a younger lawyer?
Yeah, I had the fortune of working in a medium-sized law firm at the time that had a strong litigation group. There were two senior lawyers in particular, both of whom were fellows of the college, that I had the great luck to work with, and they mentored me. And so from the very beginning, I think I was exposed to their very best in terms of litigation practice. One of my mentors was very much also involved in activities in the legal profession. He was one time president of the Canadian Bar Association and the International Bar Association. And he kind of instilled in me the importance of making contributions to the legal profession, in addition to developing your practice, in part to develop business, but in part to give back. And that was very much consistent with my past. So I started getting involved in legal organizations. Plus, they were very good about giving me responsibility from the outset. Both of my mentors have involved me from the very start in trial work and in appellate work. And that led to other lawyers in the firm, I think, gaining trust in me some more on the corporate side of the firm, and they started referring work directly to me, which, again, I think these are different times now. I think the opportunities to get as much hands-on experience, both as second chair and first chair, was much greater then. And, you know, I kind of went from there. I had, you know, one case led to another. I got a fair bit of experience in court. And, you know, again, started developing my own practice, I had a few successes, a few failures, but as we all do, but that plus my involvement, as I say, in the professional activities, I think helped me build my practice and my reputation.
You know, I think it's so easy for us as attorneys to get siloed. We sell our time to our clients, and when we're lucky, we get paid for it. And so it's so easy to to want to maximize that and spend all of our time, you know, working for clients and responding to their needs. But I really appreciate what you're saying about the value that professional organizations bring, and you know, not only the college, but others as well. I know that in my development, professional organizations have helped me interact with lawyers who made me excited about being a lawyer. They've enhanced my knowledge. You know, professional organizations really have done a lot for me as well to, you know, develop when I was a younger lawyer, and today, as you point out, hopefully give something back and make sure that the profession continues to be a good one, both for the lawyers who are in it, but also the clients and the general public. So it's really nice to hear that.
Yeah. One other aspect that I just emphasize is, you know, working in legal organizations gives you the opportunity to meet and get to know a lot of people. And as a result of the work that I've done, I'd say a good number of my very best friends I met and got to know through legal organizations, the Advocate Society in Canada, and then the college.
So I'm going to try and throw you the first curveball of our conversation. Can you tell us maybe about your first trial or your first kind of memorable courtroom experience, whether it was good or bad, when you were a new lawyer and things seemed perhaps a bit overwhelming at the time? What's something you can recall that might be helpful or interesting for our listeners?
Sure. Let me give you two incidents. One, when I was a young lawyer, I do everything I could to get into court. We had a lawyer referral service, and I do as much pro bono work as I could. I still remember my first time I was in court. It was actually a criminal matter, and it was a small matter, but I was kind of very excited about it, leading my witness through her testimony, and I remember I asked the wrong question, which opened up the ability of the prosecutor to ask a whole range of questions, and I lost. And I took from that, you know, kind of the lesson that I had a lot more to learn about examination and cross-examination than I knew at that point. Another incident that happened fairly early on was I had a case. I was second chair, and the lawyer on the other side did something that I didn't think he should have done, and I got angry. And I always have remembered my first chair saying to me, you know, what he did, he shouldn't do. But, you know, if you're angry, you're not focusing on the case. So put that aside and come back to the case. You can deal with it in the course of the trial. And I think that was a very important lesson in terms of how to deal with things in the courtroom. I've seen a number of times where, you know, lawyers, whether sometimes intentionally, I think sometimes not, succeeded in making the lawyer on the opposite side angry, and it never works. You got to put that aside.
Yeah, I have to share my personal version of that story and experience. Was a number of years ago, I was preparing for a fairly complicated and difficult criminal trial with my mentor, one of my mentors, and I was very upset about something that opposing counsel was doing, and that I felt was very unfair. And we were in the prep room, and I was just, you know, complaining about this to my mentor and getting very upset. And he just looks at me and he says, "David, he's trying to win the case too. Now be quiet and move on." And that put me in my place in a good way, and it reset me. And I still, you know, hopefully carry that out when I'm getting ready for trial. So I really appreciate that story. I want to skip ahead now, and we're going to skip some time, but then we're going to fill in the middle. And I'd like to ask next about your service as the co-lead counsel for the Public Order Emergency Commission. That is something that is unfamiliar to many of our listeners. And so I'm hoping you can tell us generally what the Public Order Emergency Commission is, the function of the particular one where you were co-lead counsel, and then I'll ask some follow-up questions.
Canada has a process where there are, if issues arise, the government of the day can call a public inquiry into that issue. This particular inquiry was mandated by our Emergencies Act, which was to deal with public order emergencies and other types of emergencies that, and this was the first time the act was ordered to be implemented. The act requires that a public inquiry be held into the circumstances of its implementation. And this particular inquiry related to the trucker protests, the Freedom Convoy that was tied up the city of Ottawa and caused incidents across Canada a couple of years ago. So that's kind of the background. There was a judge of the Court of Appeal appointed as the commissioner. From the date of his appointment, we had roughly 10 months to complete the inquiry and table a report in the Canadian Parliament.
And to set the stage for the facts a little bit, if I remember correctly, there were some restrictions being placed on commercial truck drivers at the time as the world was dealing with the COVID pandemic. And they were unhappy about those restrictions and I think how they related to vaccines in particular. Isn't that kind of the storyline that led to it? But of course, it developed into something kind of much bigger and more symbolic to many people. Isn't that right?
It became a huge issue within Canada and called into question many issues surrounding our basic rights and freedoms as Canadian citizens.
And that was because at points some truckers were detained, I think. Isn't that right? As they were like protesting and blocking roads and that sort of thing?
Yeah, there were they essentially blocked the downtown area in front of the Parliament buildings in Ottawa. That was creating issues for not only the city of Ottawa, but the residents of downtown Ottawa. And there was also incidents that occurred at various border crossings. Ultimately, that's what led to the act being invoked and ultimately action taken by the police to shut down the protest in Ottawa.
I mean, this is like fundamentals of liberty kind of stuff, right? You've got, you know, on the one hand, you've got, you know, people in the form of these truck drivers who are upset about something and they're expressing their upset. So that is freedom of expression. But on the other hand, you've got disruptions to trade, you've got roads that are blocked and very practical issues that, we have to deal with from a public order standpoint. Isn't that about right?
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, it's the question of really the limits of protest and where protest goes from legal protests to unlawful protests. And, you know, it was, as I say, a very critical issue for Canadian society, this being the first time that these powers were invoked and indeed, coming back to the theme we were talking about, you know, I knew it would be a lot of work, but you know, this was such a wonderful opportunity to be a part of something that was so significant for Canadian society, and again to get involved in a way that I hadn't been involved in private practice and really public service in terms of the work that we were doing.
And generally speaking, what is the role of co-lead counsel for the commission?
Well, it involves just about everything. From my co-lead counsel and I were the first people hired by the commissioner. And basically, we work with the commissioner to put together the administrative structure for the inquiry in terms of setting. We had offices both in Toronto and in Ottawa. We had to hire a staff of lawyers to work with us, you know, and then from there, we worked with the commissioner in assisting in identifying the parties that would get standing to the inquiry, setting up a document review process that we had thousands and thousands of documents produced, dealing with, in particular, the government lawyers over the production of documents, because there was an issue over cabinet confidence. That is, what documents or information the government would provide on the deliberations of the executive, the cabinet, in deciding to invoke the powers under the act, you know, kind of everything from there to deciding who the witnesses would be, interviewing the witnesses that would speak to us, then leading much of the evidence at the inquiry itself. The process of an inquiry is more akin to, I think, an inquisitorial process. And then the parties have an opportunity, time restricted, given the number of parties we had, to cross-examine. And then if the witness has his or her own counsel, they are entitled to examine as well, again, on a time-restricted basis. Before that, we also had a whole team of experts who were looking at various issues and providing us with papers. We had hearings that went on for weeks, and then a week of policy hearings. And then we worked with the commissioner in producing his 5-volume report, which was then tabled with the parliament.
So you're very gracious and dignified in describing how important this was and what an opportunity it was. But I have to ask you, there must have been part of Jeff Leon who said to himself when you were asked to do this, like, oh my gosh, this is a little bit scary, or this is a big undertaking. I mean, you must have had some reaction like that as well, right?
You obviously know me well, Dave. I thought about it before I took it on. I mean, being a lead counsel for a public inquiry, a royal commission, had been something that I'd always wanted to do. I'd had a couple of prior opportunities, but unfortunately, I was conflicted out of those opportunities. And so when this came along, I was very interested. Having said that, doing this kind of at the age of 70 isn't necessarily the intense sort of case that you want to have. I spent the better part of 2 months living in a hotel room in Ottawa. But having said all that, I made the decision that this was something I've always wanted to do. I talked to my spouse, who said, yeah, I thought you were going to start slowing down, but I guess if it's something you really want to do, go ahead. And so I did.
And the people of Canada are grateful. I know that it's something that is this really tremendous process that the Canadian system has for the country to grapple with these really significant events. And I know that they're better off for the role you played at the helm of the commission. I know that because I've been told that by a number of people. So well, thank you for your service in that way.
Well, thank you. I mean, I can't take my role was a fairly small one as part of a large team. And so I appreciate that.
Before we move on to other subjects, you know, I'm going to ask you to maybe share one or two other notable matters that you've participated in your career that you have either drawn a lesson from, or perhaps you're particularly proud of, or you think might have value for our listeners. And I want to couch that by saying it doesn't have to be something that drew a lot of attention or, you know, was maybe significant in the national scheme of the Canadian legal community. But what are some significant things as you kind of reflect on your career?
Well, one of the most interesting cases that I was involved in the early or in the 90s, kind of in the middle of the 90s, was some litigation over the sale of the Toronto Maple Leaf hockey team. I was acting for the company that purchased the team from the estate of the former owner, which gave rise to two different civil proceedings, a class action and a regulatory proceeding. And I got into that because of a prior case I'd been involved in where I'd been successful in a corporate valuation litigation. And so I really got on the team to deal with the important valuation issues that were kind of central to the litigation in terms of, you know, did the new owners pay an appropriate price for the shares of the company that owned the hockey team, which were purchased from an estate. And so this was very public litigation. It was in the newspapers constantly. And I remember when I first got involved, the lawyer that I was working with, who'd done a lot of work with the organization for several years, he said to me, you know, Jeff, you're going to get involved in this matter, and everybody else in the room, the lawyers and even the judge, are going to act like they're skating down the ice about to score the winning goal in the latest hockey team. Just remember, you're the lawyer and focus on the legal issues. And that was very good advice that I received, you know, in the context of a very public dispute where, you know, you have to be cautious in terms of, you know, what you say to the press and how you deal with issues in court. So that was, I think, a very good lesson that I learned early on. One of the other cases that I'm proud of was really, it was the only significant criminal proceeding that I've been involved in, and that was a prosecution by the Ontario Securities Commission. My client, who had been accused of offenses relating to misrepresentation under our Securities Act, and I had the good sense to retain a former colleague of mine who was also a fellow of the college, a criminal lawyer, and we dealt with this matter together. It was a challenging one because, you know, the cards were kind of stacked against our client at the outset. But we, after 6 weeks of trial, we had the proceeding dismissed on the basis of the fact that there was no reasonable prospect of conviction. And I have to say that sitting in the court that day and seeing my client, who was facing the possibility of being barred from the industry, financial fine, or even jail time, and seeing his reaction to not having his life destroyed by this incident was probably one of the more gratifying experiences that I've had in the profession. And that too gave rise to other litigation, a class action, and, you know, that was one of the more early and interesting cases that I had handled in that way, in respect.
When a client places their future in your hands and entrusts you with getting them through it, it's really quite an experience, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, to this day, we've remained good friends. And as a matter of fact, he used to have facilities in, this was a cold storage business in Green Bay. And just last December, he called me up and said, I'm going to go down to Green Bay for the football game against Kansas City. Do you want to join me? And so, you know, that actually, I say that in terms of lessons, because one of the things that kind of related to the something I said before, you know, I became best friends with one of my mentors, and I think I had the good fortune of having clients that I enjoyed spending time with. I know you hear a lot of lawyers, you know, badmouth their clients as being a pain and so forth. Well, I always, you know, did what I could to work, you know, in working with my clients to kind of turn them into friends if that was going to work. And, you know, that's also the way you enjoy practice and build your practice.
No, that's great to hear. And you've mentioned the college a few times, including in this criminal matter. And so that's what I want to ask about next. Tell us, if you will, when you were inducted to the college, what that experience was like. And then I'm going to ask you a little bit about your presidency.
Humbled by being invited to join the college. This was, I was inducted in New York City in 2002, which has always been a special place for the college to meet. And, you know, I'm one of these guys who, you know, grew up seeing the plaque on my mentor's walls, as I mentioned before, and learning what it was about, and never, ever dreaming that, you know, that I'd end up as a fellow of this organization. So it was a very meaningful experience for me. And you know, I had learned through other organizations that I'd been involved with, particularly the Advocate Society, as I mentioned, that if you're going to join, get involved. So the president of the college a couple of years after my induction was David Scott from Ottawa, who became a close friend and mentor to me as well. And so I and I've called him up and said, you know, if there's an opportunity to get involved in the college, then I'd like to do that. And, you know, those are the words a president or a president-to-be wants to hear. And so I got involved in a committee, the Canada-US Committee. And, you know, before long, I was asked to be vice chair of that committee, and then I became Ontario province chair, and I made the college a big part of my life.
And then you embarked on a path that eventually led to assuming the role of president in 2018. And so what was it like serving as president of the college?
This was something that even after I'd become involved in the college, even after I'd become a regent, I never really pictured myself moving on, but I feel very lucky to have had that opportunity. And, you know, I had just a wonderful experience. It was a great year as president. I was the last president to have a full year of involvement before the pandemic hit. And I decided when I became president that I was going to do all that I could to make as many meetings as I could, because I considered that an important function of the president to really bring the college to the fellows, either locally or regionally. And so I just had a fantastic experience traveling. I did, I think, over 70 trips that year. And, you know, I think I encouraged the various states and provinces that hadn't had events before or hadn't had events in a while to start a tradition again of having local events. And, you know, I can't think of one bad experience that I had. Everybody was so welcoming and genuinely, I think, happy that as president, I made the effort to come there. I always made a point of learning something about the area that I was going to and working that into my remarks. And it was, you know, just a gratifying experience.
You're very important in my memory of the college because I was actually inducted in 2019. And I remember being invited to a regional event in Ohio, where I'm based. as kind of a future inductee and thinking, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? And I don't really know what this is all about. And there's this guy, Jeff from Canada, who's the president. But you were going around collecting hats, I recall, from all the different locations, including in this instance, from this regional meeting in Cleveland. And then I got to go to the annual meeting in Vancouver, where I was inducted in just this stunning location, looking over the harbor and with the mountains in the background. And it was such an incredible experience that I was hooked, and a lot of that's attributable to you. So thanks for a really awesome summer in 2019, because it was a total blast.
Well, thanks for that. And you know, you mentioned this fellow from Canada. I mean, being the second Canadian president of the college, following in footsteps that I could never fill those of David Scott, it added something to the process, because I think a lot of people that I met hadn't had a lot of contact with Canada, didn't have a very good idea of kind of the Canadian society and the country. And so it gave me a lot of opportunity to talk about my country and learn about the different states and locations throughout the United States. And you mentioned Cleveland. I remember that event very well. It was held at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And being somebody who is very much into rock music, I still have the picture of me standing there with a guitar over my shoulder, which probably is the closest I've ever come to performing in a musical venue.
Today, as I understand it, you are transitioning your practice a little bit, and you're doing work as a neutral. And I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about what that's like, and maybe what your background as a trial lawyer has done to inform working as a neutral.
Sure. Well, I am still involved in a trial practice, a trial and appellate practice. Just last week, I was in our Ontario Court of Appeal twice on two different appeals. I think that's important, firstly, because I don't want to hang on until people ask me to leave. I want to leave when I'm making the decision on my own. Plus, I think as much as senior counsel still enjoy their work, it is important in a large firm to give younger lawyers more and more opportunity. And I've done that as a mentor, because I was the beneficiary of that. And that's been very important to me in terms of the younger lawyers in my firm. And so I have transitioned a number of my files. I've still got a couple of major class actions and other litigation going on. But I've always thought that I like to keep going when I come to the end of my practicing career, if I did want to keep going, that is, that doing mediations and arbitrations would be interested. You know, I rejected the notion fairly early on of being a judge, because I liked what I was doing too much from the other side of the table. And so, you know, I started several years ago doing more mediations, and it's actually something that I think I'm pretty good at. I think I have the temperament to understand and try and get to the essence of what the dispute is about and what's motivating the parties, and try and help them come to some resolution. And you know, then I also enjoy doing arbitration work. Just it's you know, judge-like in its character, and you know, involves a very different perspective. I think it gives you a different perspective, again, being then on the other side of the table. I see myself keeping to do it as long as I'm interested, and you know, I've had some success in being retained as a mediator and arbitrator. At the end of next month, I'm going to start what's likely to be a 3-week hearing as arbitrator, and so it's going well.
I suspect that you will have as much work as you want and perhaps too much, but that's just my personal opinion. You mentioned young lawyers a couple of times, and that's what I want to ask about next. The trend that we're all seeing, and that you've mentioned yourself, is that it's more difficult than it used to be 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, for lawyers to get stand-up time, arguing motions, examining witnesses, and doing all the things that we feel are the hallmark of trial lawyering. So with that in mind, what advice do you have for young lawyers who want to embark on a career as a trial lawyer?
I think there's nothing unique about the advice I have to share, but it's, if you're interested, you have to look for and seek out every opportunity that you can to get into court. When I was president of the college, one of the main projects we undertook was to look at mentoring, really from the other side, as to what fellows of the college should be doing to assist younger lawyers in getting that experience. But I believe that it's more difficult now, but it's possible. You have to contend with law firms that very much operate according to a business model. But my experience was, and I think from the people I've talked to, most firms will give you the opportunity. And I think it's important to never pass up an opportunity, no matter how big or small, even if you're playing a relatively minor role. So, and to me, one of the best ways to do that is to get involved in pro bono work, which is something that I consider very important, something I've been involved in. But, there's not a lot of concrete advice you can give. The fact is that it's going to be hard to develop a trial practice in this day and age. And I think it has to work at it. And I think the profession and, senior lawyers have to recognize that and, make an effort to give opportunities so that there is an ongoing trial practice from skilled trial lawyers.
Yeah, I think that the declining number of jury trials and similar kinds of trends that we're seeing make it all the more important that we make sure the younger generation is trained, because whether the numbers of trials go up or down, there are going to be trials, and if there's going to be trials, we want to have good trial lawyers. I would 100% of the time rather have good, capable opposing counsel than incompetent or poorly trained opposing counsel. The whole system is better when we have good lawyers. So,
yeah, no. And one of the things I've done, Dave, from very early on is kind of pay it forward. I had those opportunities. And every time I go to court with a junior lawyer, I do my very best, usually successful, to find a role for them either at a trial in leading evidence or cross-examining or making arguments as the trial goes on. And, I just think that's critical. And I think the good news is I think more and more courts have recognized that it's important and encourage senior counsel to give their younger lawyers opportunities like that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So I see that we are coming to the end of our time. And so once again, Jeff, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for your service to the profession, to the college, and thanks for taking the time to share your wisdom with us here on the podcast. And so I'm going to give you a chance to have the last word today. And perhaps as a thought, maybe you could share one thing about your career that people don't know about, that you're proud of, or something that you think is kind of the signature of Jeff Leon as the legendary trial attorney and preeminent trusted advisor in Canada.
Well, that's the curveball that I wasn't expecting, but I'll do my best to do that. I don't think there's any one thing that I'm most proud of. I think I'm proud of the fact that I've, over the 45 years that I've practiced litigation and trial work that I have conducted myself in a civil manner, promoted civility within the profession whenever I could, and had success by doing that. But a way to practice, in my view, requires you to interact with others in the profession and related to the profession and witnesses in a civil manner. And I'm proud of the fact that I've managed to do that. I was recognized in Ontario with an award, a civility award to that effect. And I do regard that as being a hallmark. Plus, as you mentioned, it helps to have a good sense of humor when you're dealing with all these things, and hence the hats that I collected along the way. That I ultimately, I don't know if you remember, had a sale and donated the money to the Canadian Foundation of the college. So, I feel fortunate to have had the career that I've had, and feel fortunate that it's not over yet.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Trial Tested, a podcast by the American College of Trial Lawyers. ACTL is dedicated to maintaining and improving the standards of trial practice, professionalism, ethics, and the administration of justice. Subscribe now to catch every inspiring episode.